Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 231st episode of the Atlas Society Asks. I'm Jag. I'm CEO of the Atlas Society, and I'm very excited to welcome back to the show Dr. Naomi Wolf. She's the author of the Pfizer papers, Pfizer's Crimes Against Humanity. Naomi, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me back. It's a pleasure to speak with you again, Ms. Grossman.
Great. Well, just a couple of notes for everybody. We are not on YouTube because we all know YouTube's censorious policy on controversial topics. And so we are probably going to be getting most of our viewers from X. I also want to apologize in advance. I'm in Malibu and the fire is about a tenth of the mile away. And so if you hear airplane sounds, we've got water drops flying left and right. So anyway, it's good to be here. So Naomi, we'll get to your latest book, but I'd like to start off with your endorsement of Donald Trump before the election. What inspired it and what kind of pushback did you get from the many, you know, Democrats in your tribe that you've worked with over the years, or has that ship sailed?
Right. Great question, but I can't help being a bit of a Jewish mother here and just double checking, are you safe? Is it wise for us to carry on with our conversation while there's a fire a tenth of a mile away from you?
Well, you know, it's being knocked down and having already lost my home to a fire back in 2007, my policy is if I am in town, I stay behind and I protect my property, because with only one exception, people who stay behind managed to save their homes. So I'm feeling safe. Everybody actually on my street is staying, and we're going to get through this. And been through many wildfires, many worse than what we're experiencing now. And surprisingly, it looks like our fire department system seems to be working at least this time. So. But thank you for asking.
Okay, you're welcome. You're very brave. I can't help but notice that there's like a flickering light on your face. I hope that's just a video effect, but if it's actual flames, I don't think I feel comfortable keeping you chatting with me while you're in public.
No. It's I'm actually can't visibly see the flames. I'm just seeing some smoke.
That's okay. God. Kind of. All right. Well, you're scaring me to death, but you are a grown-up.
Sorry about that. I just wanted people to be aware of like the airplane sounds when those do come in, but we'll try to mute them when you're talking.
But I mean, okay, I'll try to not keep obsessing about this, but don't you need to kind of like focus on the danger that may be coming near you? I need to be in a fascinating conversation with you and be the cause of like some horrible loss of life.
I'm fully prepared. I've got a whole, you know, system in place for dealing with this, and this is not my first rodeo. So
all right,
it'll be fine. Well, we only have you for a half an hour, so
right. Okay. Well, we'll plunge right in. And I guess I just have to say I grew up in California, and it is true that Californians deal with, you know, always have, right? Before the weaponization of climate and natural disasters, we do always deal with crazy, crazy extreme meteorological events, earthquakes, and so on. So I trust your judgment, and we will, two California girls will forge right ahead. So, my endorsement of President Trump, well,
for example, reproductive rights are a very important issue for you, as they are for me. And so I'm sure it wasn't necessarily an easy decision.
Well, it wasn't easy. It continues to not be easy. But unfortunately, my own tribe, as you rightly put it, made it impossible for me to continue to support them, because they were the ones who censored me in trying to warn women about an important and true threat to their reproductive health in the form of, I was deplatformed and kind of smeared worldwide for trying to warn women about menstrual and fertility effects from the Pfizer injections or the mRNA injections. And it was the White House that I voted for that was behind that, colluding with big tech. Interestingly, President Trump was my co-plaintiff in suing X or Twitter for having done that to us. And they were the ones who, you know, locked us down, unconstitutionally transferred wealth from the middle classes and the working classes to oligarchs via closing down Main Street, keeping big box stores open, masked toddlers, and mandated injections, which is a clear violation of the Nuremberg code, and did many, many other, you know, revolting things, including welcoming Jim Crow type laws that in New York, where I live, that essentially made it impossible for me to go indoors to eat a meal with my family. And this has been illegal. It's kind of that separation of populations has been illegal in our country since the 1964 Civil Rights Act. So my, you know, the Democrats were no longer the people, you know, the good guys, right, clearly. And also I was very heartened by the alliance of RFK Jr. with President Trump, the MAHA MAGA alliance. I think it could be a revolutionary alignment in which you've got moderates, you know, soccer moms, vaccine injured kids moms, people who just care about the environment, you know, aligned with MAGA. And I've always felt very passionately that, and it's partly from seeing it from the inside, right, as a former political consultant to the Clintons and to Gore, that the best policies really only come about when people from both sides are talking to each other and when there's kind of an effort to meet people halfway. I've seen that over and over, whereas the extremes become insane. They both have their own form of insanity. So it was because of that realignment that I finally felt like, okay, I just have to, you know, cross this bridge and burn it behind. you know, having said that, I'm very worried now in many ways. Like, some things are awesome. Some of my friends are being appointed wonderful people like Monica Crowley. But I see also, oh, and Jay Bhattacharya, fantastic. I know a good friend of the Atlas Society. But I know I also see catastrophic appointments. And, you know, there's a sense of, I really hope I haven't lost my whole life and identity throwing in my lot with, you know, a leader who will turn out to be as cynical and swampy as the last group. That's always the risk.
So Axios reported that President-elect Trump, RFK Jr., and others hosted several pharma CEOs, including Pfizer, at Mar-a-Lago last week in what Axios speculates is a potential indication that the administration sees them as much as a partner when it comes to making America healthy again. Do you feel like that's a fair reading?
You know, based on my former life in those rooms where decisions like that were made, I wouldn't read that at face value necessarily. I don't have any inside information about that meeting. But it could be a lot of things, right? It could be horse trading, you know, don't stand in the way of RFK Jr. and we'll, you know, arrest the middle managers and not you guys, right? It could be allaying pharma CEO's fears long enough to get RFK Jr. through the nomination process and then going after them with subpoenas, you know, and seeking the Justice Department on them. It could be, you know, horrible, you know, and this is what I'm really braced for these days. I'm kind of a little bit feeling like I really hope this isn't me too, right? That you needed the moderates and the former Democrats to win. Are we now not helpful, right? Are we now disposable? I'm very worried that RFK Jr. will be kind of sacrificed to, like, big pharma is so powerful, Ms. Grossman. You know, I don't have to tell you this, but they are like one of the most powerful industries in the country. They fund both sides, right? They fund Republicans, they fund Democrats.
They fund the media.
They fund the media, exactly right. There's nothing, I mean, they fund the healthcare system. No one really can survive, or everyone in politics is at a terrible disadvantage if you do the right thing and prosecute, you know, Bourla for mass murder, or, you know, in my judgment, that's minimally required, or even reverse the PREP Act, even, you know, end the funding of the media direct to consumer marketing, which only the US and New Zealand have out of all the countries in the world, because it's so corrupt a system, right? You're not able to kind of market directly to consumers in other countries if you're pharma. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, now that President Trump has been elected, and this is not based on him or RFK Jr. or any inside knowledge, it's based on my observation of a whole other set of a president and vice president, but and the people around them. But based on the kind of deals that are done at that level, it wouldn't be unthinkable that, and I hope it's not true, but that President Trump is thinking, all right, well, we're in, I'm not gonna run for re-election. This guy's more of a headache than not, basically, with all the moneyed classes. So I'll sideline him. And there are indications of that. There was a Wall Street Journal article today, and you know that when people are leaking to the Wall Street Journal from inside the transition, it's a bad sign. Either they're undisciplined or things are really bad. Either way, it's bad, right? But allegedly, the people on the RFK team were leaking, the RFK Jr. team were leaking to the Wall Street Journal that they don't like the USDA pick, and that they were kind of sidelined in the process. That's not good. So I guess what I would just say optimistically is, okay, I would just say this, MAGA, the numbers, respectfully, MAGA cannot win without moderates and walkaway Democrats. They can't. And it's tempting to, you know, be like, oh, we won, let's just do the deals that suit us. But if you want to win in the future, if you want to win in 2 years, if you want, you know, J.D. Vance to be president in the future, it is a bad idea to sacrifice and infuriate MAHA.
Yeah, well, I can see why there would be reason for concern because, for example, Trump, I don't know if he stopped doing this, but until very recently, he was bragging about my beautiful vaccine. And, you know, he's the one who initiated a lot of, or at least didn't stop a lot of these policies that were going on. And, I think just because of his personality, it would be kind of difficult to admit, gee, you know, maybe this process wasn't exactly what it needed to be. Although, if I'm correct, a lot of the documents that your team analyzed came out in this post-marketing report, which was after Trump left office. So let's
Jump in there, sort of point of information. Well, first, I did want to say that I actually don't blame President Trump for, you know, Operation Warp Speed, because, again, having been a White House spouse and a consultant to a presidential campaign and vice president, presidents and vice presidents really have to rely on their special advisors, especially for scientific and medical and other, you know, highly specialized, you know, technology, other things that they can't possibly be expected to master, you know, by themselves. So if, you know, he was surrounded by people, Burks, Fauci, et cetera, saying, you know, this is it, it's the greatest thing in the world, you know, go for it, it's going to save everyone's lives. I don't blame him for that. But at this late stage, you know, if he's still saying my beautiful vaccine, that's problematic. I wasn't aware that he was still doing that. I thought he had kind of stopped.
I think he kind of stopped. So like at some point, right. It would be great if we could pinpoint exactly, you know, when that was, in terms of acknowledging, what, you know, you and your, researchers have, analyzed and what Pfizer knew and when they knew it. So, to me, part of what is remarkable about your book is the whole process behind it. You had, 3,250 volunteers going through hundreds of thousands of documents. So let's start out with, you know, how the idea for this book came about, and you do share that story in the book, and what was required to produce it.
Sure. And just a final point, you know, for the record, some of what were in the Pfizer documents is after the rollout of the vaccine, but a great deal is before. So, no one is innocent really with this injection. So this project came about because, as I mentioned, I was canceled and censored trying to warn women about symptoms from this injection, and no one on my former, my former media universe, which was all legacy media in effect for 40 years, right? I was, a well-established commentator in legacy media. No one on that in that world would talk to me anymore. But the only person who called me was Steve Bannon. And of course, I had been conditioned to think of Steve Bannon as, very evil. But I don't care. I'll talk to anyone about women's health and protecting babies. So I gladly accepted his invitation to come on his show. I found him to be incredibly, so ironic, right? All these liberal men didn't care what was happening to women and babies. And, this hardcore MAGA guy really cared and was more of a feminist than they were. But he had me on many times to, share what I was learning about this injection. Then there was a successful lawsuit in 2022 by attorney Aaron Seary against the FDA. And according to the terms of the lawsuit, the FDA had to release 450,000 documents, internal Pfizer documents. The FDA asked the court to keep them hidden for 75 years. How do you say, we're guilty without saying we're guilty? And the court refused. So they were being released, but Mr. Bannon and I both realized that there was a risk that these would fall, into a memory hole because they were so technical and so voluminous that no reporter could really understand or process them. So he proposed that I create a kind of crowdsourced network of experts to go through them. And I said yes, of course, because I couldn't say no. But I had no idea how to do that. And then this amazing woman, Amy Kelly, appeared to become project manager, and she organized 3,250 doctors and scientists from around the world working in different time zones into 6 working groups. And they've now produced 109 reports, 50 of the most important are in this book, the Pfizer Papers. And they unfortunately revealed the greatest crime against humanity in recorded history hidden in those papers.
So, in January 2022, if I understand, this federal judge ruled against FDA's proposed timeline and ordered the agency to release the documents at a faster pace, with around 55,000 pages made public monthly. Is the analysis of these pages the focus of your investigation, and what were some of your team's key findings?
Yeah, the analysis of these pages is the whole subject, right? That's all these experts are doing. What do these documents say? And again, they're so technical that it does take just a vast amount of labor for these experts from many disciplines, which is one of the really intellectually exciting things about this project. There are cardiologists, anesthesiologists, biostatisticians, data analysts, medical fraud investigators, former FDA investigators, right? Biologists, lab clinicians. I don't think anywhere else, because of the way science now is so regimented and siloed, and also because it's funded by the NIH for the most part, I don't think science can be this holistic in other situations anymore. So it's really kind of a renaissance undertaking. It's quite incredible. But what did they find? They found, well, it's so sad. They essentially found that these injections were known to cause strokes at industrial scale, neurological damage at industrial scale, epilepsies, dementias, Alzheimer's, convulsions, tremors, known to cause kidney damage at scale, liver damage, all kinds of blood damage, thrombotic thrombocytopenia, blood clots, lung clots, leg clots, known to cause heart damage of all kinds, tachycardia, myocarditis, pericarditis. They knew that, there were 1,223 deaths in just 3 months. And those are only the deaths that doctors contacted Pfizer to tell them about, right? Half of the reports in of serious adverse events in the stroke report and the liver report show the damage, including deaths, within 48 hours of the injection. So there's a very strong cause effect in the Pfizer documents. But worse than that, I mean, to me, well, they show that Pfizer knew within a month that the vaccines didn't work to stop COVID, that within a month they knew that there was failure of efficacy or vaccine failure, as they put it. So everything that followed, Ms. Grossman, the mandates, the lost jobs, the, you know, kids cut from their basketball teams, all of it was based on a lie. They, you know, the injections don't stop COVID. They concealed the fact that they had to hide 8 bodies of dead vaccinated people, people who had died vaccinated with COVID, because if they had included them per the law, they would have had to tell the FDA that you're more likely to be seriously hospitalized or die with the injection than without, which data sets now confirm. But the centerpiece, like beyond all of that, to me, the centerpiece of the Pfizer documents is reproductive damage, especially in women. There are 62% of the serious adverse events are in women, and of those, 16% are, in Pfizer's words, reproductive injuries, reproductive disorders, compared to 0.2% for men. So you see in the center of Pfizer documents this 360-degree attack on human reproduction. The lipid nanoparticles block the ovaries, which they knew. First injection blocks the ovaries, second injection more, first booster more, until the ovaries are completely blocked. They knew that the lipid nanoparticles traverse every membrane in the body. They traverse the placenta. So you're getting placentas now that have calcifications preventing nutrients and food, nutrients and oxygen from reaching the fetus. And so babies are being delivered early because the placentas can't grow normally and they fall apart. And maternal deaths in childbirth are up by 40% because of the hemorrhaging of these placentas falling apart. They knew that there's something in the semen of vaccinated men that's injurious to women or to fetuses. They told vaccinated men not to have intercourse with unvaccinated women of childbearing age, and they did to use two reliable forms of contraception. And even though they told women not to get pregnant in the trials, 270 of them did. They lost the records of all but 36. Of those 36, 80% of them lost their babies. There are charts of menstrual damage in the Pfizer reports, what I was deplatformed for warning people about. Horrible, 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 horrible menstrual damage, like bleeding every day for the rest of their lives. 2 periods a month, no periods at all, meaning no fertility. 10-year-old girls bleeding upon being injected, 85-year-old women bleeding upon being injected, women hemorrhaging and passing tissue, agonizing menstrual injury. And there's just charts, you know, that they 15,000 women ruined with this symptom, 10,000 women ruined, you know, 7,500 women ruined. So they knew they were causing massive menstrual damage to women. And, you know, I'm an English major, I'm not a scientist, but I knew from 8th grade biology that if women are having menstrual problems of this severity in 2022, there's going to be fertility damage in 2024. And that's what we're seeing. There is a 13 to 20% drop in live births in the West and North America, according to government databases. There's damage to lactation. There's a chart of babies getting sick. I mean, a chart of sick babies from nursing vaccinated moms. And it's like this many babies are vomiting. This many babies have convulsions. One baby died of convulsions. This many babies have swollen tissue, edema. And they just, to this day, Pfizer hasn't warned vaccinated women not to nurse their babies, because the babies could die because the lipid nanoparticles and the spike protein and the polyethylene glycol, which coats lipid nanoparticle, which is a petroleum product are in breast milk now. They're in the lymphatic system of vaccinated women. They're in breast milk. They're making babies really, really sick. And nursing has gone. And, you know, I kind of like every time I tell this story, I can't believe it's not front page news. It's like feminism never happened. You know, we used to know how important it was for babies to be breastfed. And that's a really incredibly important thing to do for your baby if you can, right? Well, breastfeeding went from 34% of new moms to 14% in just 2 years. Obviously, because the babies are getting sick, they can't handle it, they're not thriving, they're being poisoned. So women are understandably giving up on breastfeeding. But that's trauma to a whole new generation. The lipid nanoparticles enter the membranes around the testes of baby boys in utero and degrade the Sertoli cells and the Leydig cells in the testes, which turns on secondary sex characteristics in male adolescents, like broad shoulders, deep voices, facial hair. So we don't even know if these little baby boys, even if they're not vaccinated, their moms were, we don't know if they're going to grow up and turn into adult men who can have children, for example.
Let me ask you, you know, most of us have heard of the myocarditis in boys, in young men, but I think what was surprising to me from reading your book was just how disproportionately women were actually more adversely affected. So we're actually running out of time, but maybe just briefly address, you know, who is affected at what age?
Well, that's kind of a tough question to answer because I don't know how to put this. It's Dr. Robert Chandler, one of our experts, described the effect of lipid nanoparticles as like a shotgun blast to the body. In other words, it goes everywhere, right? So it's not like a timeline where, you know, you'll be okay and then it goes wrong, or, you know, you might have some symptoms, but then they resolve. It's like, let me just give an example. In my circle of say 20 to 30 loved ones, a loved one has kidney damage. That's in the Pfizer papers. A loved one has turbo cancer. That's in the Pfizer papers. A baby was born prematurely. That's in the Pfizer papers. People have joint pain. Number two side effect is joint pain. Very interesting. Arthritis type pain. So many young people I know have knee replacements, hip replacements, shoulder replacements. I have a friend who's full of blood clots. She can't work anymore. Another friend with turbo cancer. I mean, these are all, and this is not the way a random group of healthy upper middle class people would be before 2020. Right? These are young, healthy people, middle-aged, healthy people. And so I know that their symptoms are a consequence of this injection, right? So that's why it's hard to generalize because Basically what I guess I want to conclude by saying this, the most disturbing thing is a piece of independent research I did that kind of made it all make sense. The IP of the BioNTech injection, which is Pfizer's injection, was sold to China or transferred to China in 2021 per the SEC filing. And China now manufactures the Pfizer injection, Fosun Pharmaceuticals. They created a billion doses, opened 14 plants in Western Europe, 11 in the United States. So now our existential adversary, a soulless, you know, communist regime that harvests the organs of its own people, are making this injection that's going into us and causing, I guess, what I'm trying to describe as systemic damage, right? That's, you know, no respecter of gender or age or organs, right? And although it's true that women are worse statistically, worse damaged. So to me, it's so clear that this is a bioweapon. It's a Trojan horse. And then you add to that the millions of people not mandated to have this injection. By the State Department and the UN from other countries that don't have a history of democracy and the rule of law and human rights traditions. And so what you're seeing, and Ed Dowd kind of confirms this. He says, just wait 5 years, right? Because a million Americans are identifying themselves as disabled every month. I'm so sorry. We're getting kind of a regime change with, you know, a biochemical regime change, essentially.
Wow. Well, I can see why it is so crucial that RFK gets in, because he's probably our only hope for having a comprehensive evaluation, or you know, similar to what you have done, and reversing course on all of these threats. So I know we only had you for a half an hour, Naomi, and I'm really grateful for your giving us this time. What's next for you?
Oh God, a long nap. no, I'm still getting the word out about this book as much as I possibly can. I think it's so important. If you order it from Amazon, that's very helpful for us. And other than that, it's just you know, running Daily Clout, my new site, and admiring the work of people like you and the Atlas Society.
Well, fantastic. And hope that we can get together soon on the other side of all of this. So
nice.
Thank you, Naomi. Thanks, everybody, for joining us again. Apologies for not being able to fit in your questions. I just had so many of them my own, but highly recommend Naomi's book. So, and it's also terrific in audiobook as well, although you know, you won't get the rich experience given all of the charts and data that is presented visually. So get them both. We'll put that link up again. And if you enjoy this video or any of the content and programming from the Atlas Society, hey, it's the end of the year. Please consider going over to atlassociety.org/donate. If you've never donated, your donation of any amount will be matched by our board. And I will hopefully see you next week. I'm confident I will. I'm going to be joined by author Brian Riesinger. He is the author of Land Rich, Cash Poor, My Family's Hope, and The Untold History of the Disappearing American Farmer. So we'll see you then.